Well, we want to thank our sponsors today for helping to make this event possible. We want to thank Wheeler Machinery, Wells Fargo, the Salt Lake Chamber, and Utah Policy Daily. Without their help, we wouldn't have such a great crowd here today, and we're grateful for their support. We're pleased to have, well, first of all, I'm Steve Cruz. I'm the executive director of Utah Foundation, and I welcome you here this morning. We're pleased to have an illustrious panel of experts here to speak about K-12 school finances and school reform ideas. And there's so many important voices to hear on this topic that we're trying something new today, kind of a rapid-fire progression of speakers. We'll give each speaker about 10 minutes to tell you what their position is on school finance and reform. And we've got quite a few speakers here today, as you can see up here. And after all the speakers are done, about 9:30, 9:35, we'll have just about a half hour of question time, and we'll have a wireless mic out in the audience so that you can ask your questions and everyone can hear. This event is being recorded today by KCPW Public Radio, and we thank them for doing that. With that, let me just quickly introduce our panel of experts. First today, we're going to hear from Christine Curl, Governor Huntsman's Deputy of Education. She'll kick us off with some brief remarks on the governor's perspective on this issue, and then we'll need to excuse her. She has some other commitments today. Then we'll hear from Dr. Patty Harrington, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, presenting official recommendations and positions of the State School Board. We'll hear from Sarah Meyer and Bruce Williams, representing the combined interests of the Utah School Boards Association, the Utah Association of School Business Officers, and the Utah School Superintendents Association. We'll hear from Kim Campbell, the president of Utah Education Association, Mike German, the vice president of Utah Taxpayers Association, Doug Holmes, chairman of Parents for Choice in Education, Scott Smith, the newly elected chairman of the State Charter School Board, and Dr. Richard Kendall, the state commissioner of higher education. With that, we'll turn over some time to Christine Curl to give us the governor's perspective. Thanks.
Welcome. I'm honored to be here, and I'm honored to welcome all of you this morning. Again, my name is Christine Curl, and I am the education deputy for Governor Huntsman. I want you to know that I bring thanks to you and to the members of the Utah Foundation for their great work, for their concern, and for their attitude in wanting to improve things for Utah. I especially appreciated, and along with my appreciation, Governor Huntsman also appreciated the time that Steve and Richard spent with Governor Huntsman in reviewing their recent publication of the Utah Foundation Paradox Lost. We also look forward to the upcoming session. We would like to have a culmination and some recommendations and maybe some next steps that will come from this meeting today that we're hoping Steve and Richard will review with Governor Huntsman in the near future. I had the opportunity to read through the position papers that were presented, and I'm sure will be discussed here today, and I'm sure it will provide for some lively conversation. Wish I could be in attendance to hear part of this dialogue, but like I said, we will be anxiously awaiting some of the recommendations and summary. I couldn't help but reflect on the similarities of Governor Huntsman's administration and the mission of the Utah Paradox and the Utah Foundation. As I read through the mission of the Utah Foundation, it is to promote a thriving economy, a well-prepared workforce, and a high quality of life for Utahns by performing thorough, well-supported research that helps policymakers, business and community leaders, and citizens better understand complex issues and providing practical, well-reasoned recommendations for policy change. I couldn't help but reflect on how similar the thinking and the alignment of philosophical views were with the Utah Foundation and Governor Huntsman. In stealing a quote out of the Utah Paradox, you could have thought it may have come out of Governor Huntsman's administration. We look to the coming years of rapid student population growth, an effort to at least maintain and perhaps increase Utah's funding effort would allow growth to pay for growth. Growth in the economy would naturally produce growth in education funding and hopefully would be enough to keep up. We are very concerned about the changes that have occurred with funding for education leading to the effort lost. We are desirous to turn that effort around. Education funding is our number one priority. I did leave a meeting that I was scheduled at 7:30 today to be here for this welcome and this brief introduction. I'm part of the early college high school efforts in Utah, and today at 11:30 there is a media event at the state office building in kicking off the scholars opportunity for students wishing to participate in a rigorous course of study. There are some graduation requirements that are outlined, and I know Commissioner Kendall and Superintendent Harrington and many of you will be in attendance to that, but let me just briefly invite all of you to attend that 11:30 kickoff today as we talk about a rigorous course of study in pushing our students towards accelerated learning programs at the high school level, preparing them in the middle school to be successful with those early college high school experiences. We're excited about that kickoff today, and we can see that this is an investment in our students. This is an investment in their tremendous ability to excel, even as high school students, into university and matriculate onto then being contributing citizens of the Utah economy. In conjunction with that, we are also sponsoring an education summit. And if you have not received an invitation to that summit, let me cordially invite you to attend next Tuesday's Governor's Education Summit at the Huntsman Cancer Institute. Again, we will be looking at initiatives nationwide and the direction that Utah needs to be pursuing when it comes to programs that will help our students be successful and funding issues that are presenting current problems with Utah. So with that, I do need to get back to this meeting with the Early College High School Initiative. Please stay posted. I think you're going to see some great things coming from the Huntsman administration when it comes to accelerated learning programs and opportunities for high school students here again beginning in the middle school years, but also drilling down into the early childhood education opportunities and helping students to be successful early, giving them the boost that they need and the support that they need to then be successful in elementary, middle school, and on through high school. So we will be anxiously awaiting some outcomes from today's meeting and some recommendations, and hopefully be scheduling more time with Stephen Richards to sit down with Governor Huntsman and talk about some of the outcomes from today. Again, we appreciate the great work of the Utah Foundation and hope that we have a wonderful and productive day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Christine Curl, for offering the perspective of the governor. We are pleased to hear that Governor Huntsman is paying attention to this issue and is looking forward to doing something, some policy measures about it. Before we hear from Dr. Harrington, I'd just like to make a few remarks as background to make sure that you understand what Utah Foundation has done on this issue and why it's important. In the past 10 years, Utah Foundation has occasionally written about what we've called Utah's education funding paradox. And the paradox was that we had a very high tax burden and tax effort for education, but yet that high effort yielded the lowest per pupil funding in the nation. We all know why the lowest per pupil funding in the nation came from that, and that's because we have 25% more kids than the average state does. And that's something that we just expect here in Utah. But at least we knew, especially during the mid-90s, that we were trying about as hard as we could to fund education for Utah children. And when we say funding about us, trying about as hard as we can, what we're talking about is when you measure the amount of revenue, tax revenue, that was dedicated to K-12 public education as a percent of our personal incomes, we were carrying the fifth highest load in terms of funding education in the country. We were working harder than 45 other states to fund education at an adequate level. Understanding that with all the kids that we have in this state, that it would be a small amount per pupil, but we knew that we were doing the most that we could. The last couple of years, we've been saying that paradox was starting to unravel. And this year, when the data came out from the U.S. Census Bureau that allow interstate comparisons, it was the first time that we know of that Utah had fallen below the national average in this funding effort. So falling from fifth in the nation back in 95 or so to 27th in the nation in fiscal year 2004, we think was very significant. And so we thought we'd ask the question, how did we get here? And I think many of you have read the report that we published in April. It's been handed out to you as well as you came in today. And I'll just hit on a couple of the high points from that. Basically, in response to rapidly rising property values in the early mid-90s from an overheated economy, legislators responded to demands for some tax cuts on the property tax side. I think this was probably a legitimate political response to a problem that was facing taxpayers. And so the legislature has control over two major portions of the property tax. One is the amount of homeowners exemption. The other is the statewide basic levy that is levied in all districts for schools as part of the funding equalization measures. And so that homeowner's exemption was doubled, more than doubled, and over a period of a few years, the statewide basic rate for property tax for schools was cut about in half. At the time, the property tax cuts didn't have that great of an effect on overall levels of education funding. There might have been differences in particular districts, but when you look back at the numbers, income tax was growing so fast at the time that it was making up for the difference in the lost property tax. But then in 1996, a constitutional amendment was placed on the ballot, and voters were allowed to vote on something that they approved, which was to change the earmarking of income tax revenues for which had been dedicated entirely to K-12 education, to allow income tax revenues, corporate and personal income tax, to be shared with higher education. And when that occurred, I think probably voters were thinking that this would help higher education grow. But the truth is that as more income tax revenues were provided to higher education over the following 10 years, that general fund money that had been going to higher education was pulled out. Some of it. And so there was an almost equal matching transfer away from higher education as income tax was transferred in. Well, what that in effect became was a transfer of income tax revenue to the rest of the general fund to fund social programs and some transportation projects. Well, why does that matter? We think it matters because in a rapidly growing state, it's important to stay focused on investments that provide capacity for continued growth. And back in 2003, Utah Foundation published a report that took a look at state spending trends over the previous 10 years. And there was a trend in those numbers that kind of illustrated what's been going on. The only things in the state budget that were growing in relation to personal income or growing faster than the economy were health and human service programs and prisons. And then there was some growth in transportation funding as well, but then it flattened out at the end of the 90s. And so, if overall spending in the state, if the overall tax burden had been declining during this entire time, I think one could say that education was just taking its fair share of the reductions. But the truth is that the tax burden wasn't declining. It was increasing slightly or holding its own most of those years. And yet, education, public and higher, was receiving a smaller share of that growing tax pie. If Utah had kept up its funding effort over those 10 years, we calculated that in 2004 there would have been $600 million more in education funding that year. That would have been $1,200 more per pupil. That would have moved Utah from 51st in the country to 47th in the country on per pupil funding. And I think that's significant. I think every $1,000 in per pupil funding for education matters, and there's a lot of good that can be done with it. But there are a number of advocates who would say that per pupil funding doesn't really matter that much, and that if you compare across the country, there are states with very high per pupil funding, and they don't have significantly better performance than Utah. But there's somewhat of a false dichotomy there. When you look at places like New York and New Jersey that spend $12,000 or $13,000 per pupil, and their test scores aren't any better than ours, in some they are, some they aren't. But those are states that face some huge problems from urban blight and poverty and families that parents don't have college education, and they don't have the advantages that Utah has. If you want to look at a state that is similar to Utah demographically and with a high proportion of intact families with college education, look at Minnesota. Minnesota spends about at the national average now on per pupil funding, about $8,000 per pupil. But they top most of the lists on test scores nationally. They have a demographic very similar to Utah. It's something that could be Utah's potential to perform like Minnesota does if perhaps some more funding were available. It appears to us that the state budget has been in a transition these past 10 years away from a budget that focuses on investments. And by investments, I mean spending that is done today that is meant to yield a return at some future date. And investments can include transportation funding to build capacity for growth, and it also includes education, because we're building capacity in young people to be able to be vital performing members of society and the workforce in the future. And we have moved from a budget that focuses most of its growth on those kinds of investments to a budget that seems to be focusing most of its growth now on health programs and prison programs, and somewhat on transportation, which is needed. So we think that what we'd like to come out of this process is a good, robust dialogue on why this matters to other kinds of organizations and what can be done about it and how we could focus this budget process more on investment to ensure Utah a strong future. With that, I'd like to turn time over now to Superintendent Harrington, and then we'll proceed through the program as outlined earlier. Thank you.
Good morning. It's a treat to be with you today. I look across the audience. I see many longtime friends and some whom I've just met in the last few years, and I feel among friends this morning. I'm glad to be here. I came here before the registration table. Scott Smith and I are early birders, and we visited for a while, but they tracked me down, put a name tag on me, reminded me of a day in my elementary school when I was principal in 1985. A kindergarten student was coming down the hall to access the bathroom, and I had just met her and as part of a class, and I said, "Good morning, Stephanie, how are you?" And she looked at me with terrified eyes. She couldn't remember who I was, what I was, and she only wanted to find her teacher. I said, "How are you doing, Stephanie? Is today a good day for you?" She finally looked at me and decided she had to say something. She said, "Good morning, Bishop." There are some entrenchments in Utah County that lead to those kinds of things. I'm delighted to be here at this forum today and in the invitation to represent the Utah State Board of Education, for whom I have great respect, in responding to Paradox Loss, the publication of the Utah Foundation. I appreciate the invitation of Steve Cruz and his board. Utah Foundation has identified an enormous concern in funding for public education, exposing the fact that Utah's efforts in funding for schools and their children has dropped dramatically since 1995 and now represent a smaller share of every $1,000 of personal income than in previous years. This not only makes Utah the state that spends the least per pupil, but this by hundreds of dollars to the next lowest state. But it also now indicates that while Utah's effort in the past was strong, it has weakened considerably and is at best less than an average effort. This effort is notwithstanding the large increase appropriated by the Utah legislature in 2006, an infusion that was much larger than in recent years and achieved with the strong support of legislators, board members, and the governor alike. Understandably, The Utah State Board of Education and local boards of education are deeply concerned about this troubling trend. Increasingly, children are coming to our schools with large disparities in their abilities. It is not unusual to find children coming to kindergarten who have developmental language like a three-year-old and do not know the difference between the front and the back of the book. At the same time, in perhaps the same classroom, come children who are already reading like an eight-year-old with great ability. Teachers are expected in those classes to reach each one and further their skills, meeting standards set forth by the Utah State Board of Education for every grade. Teachers and administrators face these dilemmas every day, yet they are very difficult to make inroads on these challenges. Poverty and the lack of early childhood stimulation create chasms of learning that are very difficult to backfill. Much has been said about the achievement gap in Utah. My own word for it is pernicious. It must be closed if you and I are sincerely interested in the vitality of a state in the future. The future belongs to families, and only when there is stable income and fluency in English will families be able to sustain themselves in Utah and the United States. Some of the best work we can accomplish is to help a child learn English or learn to read with ability. English language learners is one group for whom the achievement gap is most pernicious, and they come to our schools at every grade level, not just in the kindergarten year. Our methods of teaching English language learning students are research-based and targeted, but our efforts require new money, over and above that of the traditional classroom. You cannot eliminate, for example, a traditional classroom teacher when you hire a teacher for English language learning students. Both are needed. Thus, the expense is great and the need is clear. The gap is related to poverty, not minority status. We have bright and excellent students from among all of our ethnic subgroups. Some, however, suffer the effects of generations of poverty and thus are challenged with trying to construct meaning in literacy, even in their own language, and applications in math. They, too, demand additional resources and help that are more than what can be provided in the regular but able classroom under the guidance of an able teacher. I needn't further rehearse the needs in our schools in Utah. Many of these needs are not just for the disadvantaged. Let's not misunderstand. We have needs to grow our acceleration options and to expand our advanced courses, our world languages, internship opportunities, to name just a few. I believe we all agree that our educators do a remarkable job of teaching our precious children in our communities, and some of us feel that more must be done to ensure hope and excellence for all children. So what of the future? Utah has, for the past 2 years, enjoyed a highly successful economy spurred in by innovation and enterprise of those who likely attended public schools just a decade or two ago. For 2 years, the state has seen a so-called surplus of tax revenue, particularly in income taxes. But of course, certainly no more money was collected than was due. Decades ago, under the weight of the Depression, visionary Utahns set aside their income taxes specifically to benefit the children in their public schools. In 1996, a vote of the people decided to slice that income tax revenue in two ways, to fund public education and to fund higher education. While there is still debate as to that vote, Utahns made their choice. What they didn't choose, and what they still do not want, is for public schools to be underfunded and potentially uncompetitive with schools throughout the nation. What Utahns want are teachers who are well paid and dedicated to providing a myriad of rigorous learning experiences for their children. Experiences in the arts and the sciences, in physical education, and in extracurricular and leadership opportunities. What we cannot afford in Utah is to lose great young teachers who are now making the decision to move to Wyoming, where they will start at salaries that are 30% more than we offer in Utah. We, as public educators, can only provide excellence on a slim dollar for so long, and then we will be passed up by systems and states that feed their schools and their children a rich supply of well-compensated teachers, computers, software, tutoring, summer studies, and ample access to textbooks, literature, and library materials. The $351 million of underestimated revenue is not a surplus, but an opportunity. We should call them opportunity funds. We must match the opportunity with the will to provide our children with excellence in their schools. The State Board of Education seeks to increase funding streams and public education in part with the underestimated revenue, but even more through taking six key actions to create a stable and healthy funding stream for our schools. I will speak of stabilizing and increasing funding streams first, and then talk briefly about how innovation and efficiency might bring about continued academic excellence in the use of those revenues. Number one, increasing funding streams. First, put the opportunity funds to work for our children. Just as the state sets aside 25% of leftover income